Schofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Four o'clock hour is here. Schofield and Company. This hour is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. 766-1400 is the call from anywhere in the state of Nevada number. Big Four on the way. Much to get to this hour. WNBA report from Willie Ramirez in the middle of the hour. And we'll check in with Justin Watkins, our legal insider, on Wednesday's Big Four time.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four. Number four.
So, Adam, we were just talking to Arash Markazi about the developments last week. I don't really know a whole lot about the story, and I should, because I really like New Orleans, and obviously I love Vegas. I'm here. First of all, what happened in New Orleans? Do we know why WrestleMania is like, yeah, we can't do it there?
I don't believe it to be about New Orleans. I believe it to be about Vegas. And
I'll also say,
Arash said it's a company now that is a, kind of a Vegas-based company. It's TKO. It's LA, Vegas, you know, with UFC, WWE, all these different things. More important than that, it's also a public company now. And financially, the WrestleMania event in Las Vegas was a massive event. And I think there are potentially hard people that are shareholders that are like, yeah, we might want to do that again. That was kind of good for our bottom
line. Are we talking every year, or they just figured, hey, New Orleans might be...
Or at least... Might not
work very well. Like, there's other cities that work well, but New Orleans started making them nervous.
I don't even know if it's that, or if it's, hey, maybe there was like one or two things they're still trying to work to finalize, and they were like, why are we fighting to do this again? I don't know that to be sure. Like, I've heard different things from different people around this, but like I said, I think it's more about Vegas than it is about New Orleans. And you know, if there was like one holdup, people are like, why are we jumping through hoops to make less money? Why don't we go where we made more money? And I think that there's more in store here, right? I think potentially this could be not in Vegas. It could also be half in Vegas.
What does that mean?
It's a two-night event.
Where else would it be?
No idea. But could you split it up? Sure. I think that there's things that you could do. Maybe even not in this country. There's different things that you could do. With a two-night event. I mean, I think it works better if it's in one place, and probably Vegas is what's going to happen.
I was going to say it's more attractive for Vegas, especially if the LVCBA is going to put up public money and part of their budget to draw them back in, then we want 5 days of it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think all those things are still being worked out. I think there's a lot of moving pieces. I was told right from, you know, when the report came out last week, was assured from people that would know in that world, it's not done. Like, I believe there was an off-the-record quote from somebody that said, and I obviously won't say who came, said, we loved it there. So, like, they really enjoyed being here. The event worked very well. But nothing's done. And I think the reports that it's here for sure are premature, but I think it's certainly a front runner.
Number three.
We just do things right. And it's not just because we have gambling. We have changed over the years. We've adjusted as a city, right? You mostly grew up here.
Sure.
The last, whatever, you're in your 50s now, the last 40 years or so. So you've seen the metamorphosis, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, we're not all gambling. When I first got here, actually, this is when I'm going to remember it, but I remember, and then MGM had that ill-fated effort with trying to do the amusement park out back, but I do remember MGM, like, branding itself.
It was awesome.
The home of entertainment. I didn't think they needed the kiddie entertainment, but, like, that's when we started branding it, and it's just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. As opposed to a place that is only about gambling and is now dying because it's only about gambling, and it actually could have made a transformation into, and you're going to laugh at this, but, you know, a resort town with gambling. Right? But it gets in its own way, and the state sucks as well. Atlantic City. Atlantic City is all about gambling. And now it's down to like a couple days a week where people go down there. It blows. The city itself sucks because it's always been mismanaged. There's always been a grift and people trying to steal money.
And it's in New Jersey.
And yes, that's part of it. And that's why I mentioned the state, because there's always a money grab. There's never a concentrated effort to move forward and make everything better. And I'll give you a perfect example. And I the only reason I'm playing this today is because I don't think a lot of people around the country even know what it's like in a state like that. It actually, one of the cool things about the state, you may rip on it, they do have a massive shoreline. And there's a, mostly, it's all money along that shoreline. You can't live on the Jersey Shore without money. It's coveted property. But one of the craziest things ever, and I didn't even realize it until I moved out here and I started going to California, and everyone's like, California sucks. You know what's great about California? You can go on a beach, you walk right on. Listen to this nonsense. I mean, this has been going on for years and years and years, but now it's just, it's gotten to the point of lunacy.
Absolutely not.
200.
200? Oh, that is kind of expensive.
No, probably not.
No.
Get ready to shell out two Benjamins if you're planning on spending the summer here in Deal. That $200 a head, it's the most expensive seasonal badge in the state.
Beach badges. And every person's like, no, 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 no. $200 for the season to go on a beach in one particular city along the Jersey Shore. I mean, yeah, you could go, like, if you went a lot to the beach, you go 20 times, still 10 bucks a pop? $200 for the season? But, like, the concept of people around the country are like, wait, you have to pay? Yes, you have to pay.
I mean,
it's every single city has their own beach. So every single one has different beach badge prices. So if you like to go to like four different beaches, you have to pay for a seasonal or a daily at every beach.
I mean, if I had a beach that I preferred there and I lived there, I would kind of, I might be in favor of this.
Could you go enough to justify it?
That's what I'm saying. If I'm like somebody that lives in that town that wants to go to the beach a lot and they're like, yeah, and it's hard to find a spot. You got to go at 5 a.m. to make sure you get your, you know, to get your spot near the wherever you want to be. Like, okay, that might be worth it. It's each person though, or it's a family?
No, it's each person. I mean, there might be a discount for kids. Yeah. But if you're bringing a family, no, it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars for beach badges. Now, I will throw out, there might be four people who are listening right now who want to say they recognize the city that was mentioned for a beach badge for $200 for the season. It's Deal, New Jersey. It is one of the most hoity-toity spots on the Jersey Shore.
And I'm sure
they're pricing it, why?
To keep riffraff out.
They don't want you and me on the beach.
Of course.
And believe me, we are riffraff compared to who they want on the beach. So they're doing it on purpose. But that doesn't mean most places aren't now $80, $100, $120 for a season for a beach bag. I don't, like, my parents live near the show, Jersey Shore. And they're not going to go to the beach enough to justify it. They're in their 80s. But I might down the road. Like, what am I going to be paying down the road?
I would
in
get a,
Seaside.
I'd get a part-time job at the Shore Store.
Would you? I don't want to work at the Shore Store. I've been there a bunch of times. It doesn't look like it's fun.
I'd
rather sling pizza and dogs somewhere.
I honestly can't believe it's 15-year anniversary.
Is it already?
It's a lot longer.
Are you still watching?
I tune in here and there.
I watch more than you do. I actually still do watch it.
Yeah, I'm not watching regularly.
I watch a lot.
I mean, it's
and I don't
original,
hate them. And I never did.
Original Jersey Shore. Yes, obsessively.
Yes. It's even better now, man. They're all grown up. And they're all crazy still.
No, I don't.
Look at Griffin. He's like, what?
I check it out now, and I'm like, no.
Come on, man.
A bunch of them have cases. A bunch of them have kids, and they're I can't say whether they're good or bad parents, but, like, that is entertaining.
Mostly bad.
Mostly bad.
I would say you don't know because I don't know if they're actually raising their own kids. They have made so much money. That show is an amazing success story for all of them. They have made so much money. Unless, you know, you're the situation and you squandered the money like five times and you went to jail.
Paulie's making a ton of money.
Paulie is making a ton. And let me tell you, not to get creepy, but he's putting it back into his body. Because he ain't young.
Sure.
He's got to be like 45 years old.
Well, I mean, the hair product
alone. He looks like a pro wrestler. He is shredded.
Yeah, the hair product alone's got to be.
The hair product is very expensive. I don't know how he does it.
Hair products and steroids.
Whoa.
There's ways to say this subtly. Did you hear how I approached it?
My bad.
Don't ever, allegedly, we don't ever mention the S word here. We talk about the special sauce. We talk about whatever's flowing through his veins.
Plus, he was talking about Paulie, not Vinny.
I've seen Ronnie at Lifetime Fitness. I know what that Ronnie. Drug looks like.
Okay, all right. Easy. All right, we're getting out.
Bag of pink Christmas.
Get out. Number two.
Number two.
He might have been off to the side with the baggie, giving it to Stephon Diggs and his ladies. Okay, I've been asking a lot about competition at Raiders camp because it's very early. I don't know that competitions are really forming yet, and I'm not killing these folks, mostly guys, some women who are content creators who don't get to go to practice. But I think they kind of have to piece together things And I saw a report that Richardson will battle for a starter's role. And that caught my eye. Yes?
I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of competition. Well, first of all, that's if you were to ask Pete Carroll, you know, will DeCam be battling for a starting role? Everybody on this team is battling for the
role. By the way, fill people in on who DeCam is.
DeCameron Richardson.
Right.
Rookie but from
background.
Last year.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I think he's probably going to be in the mix. He's got good tools physically. Like, he's got everything you probably want. Last year there were some struggles, but he also put some good stuff on film as well. I do think pretty much everyone that's on the roster at corner right now has a chance for playing time.
Really?
Because I don't – like, Ja'Cory Bennett, most likely – on one side, Stokes is a guy that like a lot of people are raving about right now. But again, they've been on the field like three times. Like, settle down. I'm just saying, they've liked what he's done the first couple of practices. But I don't think there's like a clear cut like order right now in terms of where everybody stands in the cornerback room. And obviously, Porter comes in with all the physical tools that they can want, but not that much experience. I actually was talking to some of the assistants today. Were saying, you know, they like that he doesn't have experience. Like, he doesn't. You know, you talk about, you know, developing habits. Like, he doesn't have the bad habits you have to fix. Like, he still doesn't really know what he's doing, which means we're the ones coaching him on how to play the position. So they kind of like that about him, and obviously the physical traits are there. So yes, to say he's battling for a position, I think is totally fair, because I think in the eyes of the team, Gino's not battling, Brock Bowers isn't battling, Ja'Cory Myers probably isn't battling, but everybody else is. Ashton Jeanty probably not.
Number one.
You know, every once in a while it hits me when I'm up on the web, and especially now on YouTube, there's all these different shows, and man, what a cottage industry the NBA, check that, the WNBA has become for older males. Man, Caitlin Clark goes down with an injury, and these guys are rejoicing about it, and I don't mean they're anti-Caitlin Clark, they are way pro-Caitlin Clark, and the guys I'm talking about are Jason Whitlock, Dan Dockich, this dude Coach JB, who's kind of in that whole circle. He was on the JUCO reality show Last Chance. It's pretty crazy what's going on. And I saw banners today that included, let's see, Doc Travis saying WNBA hates Caitlin Clark. Okay, another one from that Coach JB. Clark's hurt. Nobody's watching now. Dan Dockich with a picture of Angel Reese. I'm a liar! What the hell is going on? This league is loved by older dudes.
Well,
and I think it's mostly a bit for them, but it's what their audience, what they feel their audience wants. And this is something we got into last week with what I thought was brilliant from Joey Taylor. Give me the Whitlock take here. Before we go to break.
But this is what has happened to all of sports and all of American culture. It's been feminized. We used to like, oh, you got an ouchie? Put some ice on it and shut up and get back in the game. Fans used to be able to go to games. This is since the beginning of time, and shout and yell things and throw rotten tomatoes at poor performances. But now we've erected this safe space, and it's all because everything has been feminized. We must make everything comfortable for women.
Jason Whitlock, about 4 years older than me, with the throw tomatoes at athletes. Okay.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, it's time for our midweek report on the W. Women's Basketball Insider Willie Ramirez up with Cofield and Adam. All right, Willie, let's get right into it. There's some issues we got to talk about with the Aces, and the first thing I wanted to get to is tight game against the Mystics, needed a Jewel Lloyd three late, and then just kind of got lit up for 102 against the Storm. So defensively, what are we seeing right now?
Defensively, what we're seeing is the second... second worst defense, I believe it is. There are in terms of shooting percentage, and they just—it's one of the staples of Becky's system, and yet it's not working because teams are having their way with them. And it's sort of the second year in a row that we've seen this ever since they went on their two-year run to win a title. It's been something where the rest of the league is catching up. And I think last year we saw the upper crust of the league do it in terms of New York, Minnesota, the better teams in the league. And now we're seeing the teams that were at the bottom of the league improve. There's been a little bit of a change in terms of, you know, some of the teams that lost a lot of key players, most notably Connecticut. They remain winless last night to Dallas, picking up its first win. So I think, you know, they're just not connecting defensively. It's not working. And the other thing that she counts on, Becky Hammon, that is the defense translating into offense. So neither one are translating into one another. There's just a major communication gap at both ends of the floor for this team right now.
And for me, the crazy thing is that if you're going to go with a roster where you're mostly going to play small ball, which is four outs and one in, you should be freaking at least great defensively on the perimeter and be able to cause turnovers and get out on the run. That's where the confusion lies right now. But this is, you pointed out last week, Willie, it's very much a roster in flux because they're trying to do all this while developing a bench and developing those roles.
Right. And if you look at right now, the bench numbers, this team, its bench is ranked ninth in terms of scoring production, 17.8 points off the bench right now, which, you know, is not a good sign with the Sparks coming in. When the Sparks have the number one defense against the opposition's bench, they're allowing opposing benches to score 17.2 points, lowest in the league. So while they're trying to figure things out with who's coming off the bench and who's going to score, they're also trying to figure out the quality, you know, giving quality rest to their starters. And the problem is that they're just not getting the quality minutes from the bench. You know, Crystal Bradford missed the first game. She's coming off the bench. You have Kirsten Bell, who's trying to, you know, she's playing somewhat with a heavy heart this season, but she's playing on the last year of a guaranteed contract, so she's got a lot at stake. Tiffany Mitchell, and nobody's really stepping up. And now here's the problem. They're also dealing with injuries, most notably Megan Gustafson. Cheyenne Parker-Tyus isn't injured. She's pregnant, and she's due back later this season. But they're playing shorthanded. They're playing with a brand new bench, if you will. And right now, I know that's the biggest part. That's the biggest frustrating part for Becky, is trying to get everybody to play a full game, which we haven't seen. Even against Connecticut, which was a dominating win there, there were things that she wanted to see done better.
Isn't not to suggest that being bad is part of the plan. But wasn't this the plan all along of, hey, you're using the first part of the season to figure all this out, to, you know, to work out what you want to work out in terms of the bench, to figure out the defense and how she wants them to play and how she wants them to mold. Like, I don't think anybody expected this team to be peaking at the beginning of the season, and I don't think they wanted to.
Well, we didn't, those in the know, but I mean, the, you know, the 10, 12, 13,000, whoever, whatever it is that the MUA holds, 10,000 plus, they're showing up. They're expecting it. And I think that they're saying, what's going on? We have the best player in the world. We have the reigning MVP. We have the point god. We have Jackie Young. We have Jewel Lloyd now. So I think the expectations from a fan standpoint, they're expecting better things. And, you know, the whole Jewel Lloyd for Kelsey Plum argument in terms of it was a quote-unquote even swap, if not better, because Jewel Lloyd's defense, it's just not translating into what looks to be good basketball. You're right, Adam, that, you know, it's a trying out period. And Asia Wilson even said it after the Seattle loss. She was like, hey, it's early in the season and we're going to fix this. It's, you know, we're four games into the season. So they get it, but it's also something where you don't want to look bad doing it as well. And they've looked pretty bad at times over the course of these first four games, in New York, in Seattle, and at home against Washington. They have to pull that one out at the end. So, you know, it's a matter of, yeah, you want to test things out and you want to make things right, but they've looked bad at more times than not.
By the way, over-under win total for the season was 30.5. So no one told the books or the bettors that, hey, this might be a 25-19 team, which the way they're looking right now, that actually might be a good season. Big Friday night for so many reasons. As Kelsey Plum and Hamby are back in town, you want to talk about max motivation.
And Kevin Durant.
I know probably. You've we'll get to the Kevin Durant angle. I know you've written a bunch on this, but just talk about Plum and how she's played so far and her return and how you think she's feeling about being dealt.
I think that Kelsey Plum belongs in the, you know, our good friend Jeff Sherman tweeted out the odds for MVP, and even though her odds are long, she is fourth now with Nafisa, Caitlin Clark, Asia Wilson, wow, and Kelsey Plum in the conversation. Because remember, it's not necessarily being the best player in the entire league. It's the MVP to your team. And Kelsey Plum 100% has done that. She was one of two players in last night's game against the Atlanta Dream that topped the 3,500-point plateau for her career. Her and Alicia Gray both did it. I'm still trying to figure out this Sparks team because I really don't get it. They either play really, really well or you're sort of scratching your temple. They've lost to the Valkyries. Last night they lost to the Dream, both on their own in L.A. So I think that there's going to be a lot of emotion and there's going to be a lot of motivation to play well. That's another team that when it gets healthy is going to be dangerous. They're missing Cam Brink, Rekia Jackson, and Ray Burrell. When those three come back in the summer, look out for Los Angeles to make some noise late in the season because, as Adam pointed out with the Aces, they're still figuring some things out under first-year coach Lynn Roberts, who's a very good coach, spent a lot of time with Utah, was a thorn in a lot of those Pac-12 powerhouse teams' sides. And I like what Lynn Roberts can do, and I like the relationship that she's building with those players. I've been in on the Zooms. You can see that there's good vibes, there's good chemistry, there's not a lot of bad tone. Even after losses, they're all there to win. Kelsey Plum's quote this past week when I asked her a question on Zoom, she said, "Willie, I could give a damn about points. I want to win." So I led my WNBA notebook about her this week, and she was straightforward, and that sort of caught fire on social media. Some people, you know, content creators were eating that video clip up.
I love what I saw in the most recent games with Angel Reese setting a pick on Alyssa Thomas, which you remember Thomas gave her to business last year. And, you know, the only way Reese is not going to get knocked around and mocked by some or Kelsey Plum, I'll tell you what, if Plum does this again, I don't know if you saw it, but Plum made a layup and then runs around and goes to too small. Okay, let's see what happens next time we play. But that pick she set on big Alyssa Thomas, where Thomas is falling down, grabbing her jersey like, ah! Reese has got to do that. You know, you want to be an enforcer. You want to play hard. You want to let people freaking, you know, you don't want this, but people are knocking you in the head. You got to push back.
Well, we've been saying that with all the second year players, right? Yeah. Including Caitlin Clark. This is the year where you have to come out and show that you spent the offseason bulking up, muscling up, and learning that you're not going to be pushed around. And I think that she's been waiting for that moment. You know, I think it was in the back of her mind at some point she said, "I'm going to set a pick on the engine and knock her clean out." And that's what she did. And now I do think that she was, Alyssa Thomas that is, was falling and was trying to brace herself. I don't think she was maliciously tugging to pull Angel Reese down. I think she was trying to brace herself so she didn't fall as hard as she was going down, because she went down hard. And it was a great screen.
It was moving. Should have been a foul.
It was moving, actually. But they can't. They're not going to call. If they called every foul in the WNBA, I know. I mean,
if they called that in both sports, there'd be a lot more time. What I'm saying
in the WNBA.
I'm not saying it. Oh, because they don't do moving screens in the NBA. They're perfect, right?
They do moving screens. My comment wasn't on moving screens. It was calling every foul.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just saying it was a foul and she was moving, but it was still fantastic to see.
Okay. Mystics, then the Sun, the next couple of games, into June. Then we're talking about Sky, Dream, Liberty. That's 4 or 5 games out for the Fever. And Caitlin Clark, now down for a couple of weeks. Will they keep winning? Could this get bad? You got 30 seconds.
They will not. It will not get that bad. It's not going to be that big of a deal. And yes, you're missing Caitlin Clark, but let's not forget, Kelsey Mitchell's been the leader of this team. You got defensive stalwarts in DeWanna Bonner and Lexi Hull. You have Sophie Cunningham in town now. The Fever will be able to hold their own, especially the games against Connecticut, which will be emotional for Stephanie White. I don't think they're going to miss – they're going to miss her, but I don't think it's going to be that dramatic that everyone thinks it will be.
All right, so you're going, what, next 6-3-3? It won't be like 1-5, won't be 0-6.
It could be 4-2.
Ooh, okay. All right, Willie, we're up against it, buddy. We'll be talking to you live from the MUA before the big game on Friday. We'll talk to you, buddy.
All right.
There he is, Willie Ramirez. Make sure you go check it out, wgramirez.com, and up on Twitter, Willie G. Ramirez. Notebook out a couple times a week. The site is awesome. No one's writing like this around the WNBA. Willie has it all going on. You got my point, though, about calling fouls in the WNBA. You can't call everything. I saw who was talking about how much tougher the league is and physical the league is versus the NBA. Please, at a minimum, stop comparing yourself to the NBA. Please.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Good stuff from Willie Ramirez. We got a lot of Raiders notes coming up. Adam talking to a bunch of the coaches today. Adam Hill is here for the full show. We're fired about that. This hour is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. 766-1400 is the number. Got to dial 775 in the north as we are on for this hour in Reno and Northern Nevada. Griffin is here as well. So there is a whole thing setting up now. This league just keeps on giving, and a lot of it is because of fans picking their side of a rivalry with Reese and Clark. There's also a whole aggro, angered, kind of frustrated male demo that has sided with Caitlin Clark, and they're mad at everyone else. They don't like the league. And I said, this is a whole cottage industry. You know, you get Doc Travis saying WNBA hates Caitlin Clark. That was up on his video today. Another guy, Coach JB, is like, no one's going to watch. Dan Dockage calling Angel Reese a liar. We played that bite earlier from Jason Whitlock, who said, you know, he hates the league because everything's so soft, and that racial slur thing, that was because everyone's so soft and the league is soft and we've all become very feminine. You know, oftentimes it's the whole, like, we've become feminists from, like, some of the fattest, like, roly-poly dudes who, like, wouldn't start a fight or win a fight in public. It's like, bros, are you feeling kind of, like, less than you used to be? And I'll go back to the bite from last week. Joy Taylor is another one who drives guys nuts because she's good-looking. She knows sports. She will flaunt it. She'll say, guys stink. She didn't say all. She says the lonely guys, and this is the kind of thing that you know is Doc Travis or Dockage or Coach JB or Whitlock, when they see this, they're like, I think she's talking about me.
The masculinity is actually what's being attacked. Everything is softened now. It's, you know, everything is feminine, and the marriage rates are dropping because nobody wants to deal with a cheating alcoholic man when you can just get lonely. Your own apartment.
Yeah.
Guys are lonely. Men in these caves that would never touch a woman in their life anyway. I think that male loneliness is a massive problem.
Okay, so
I think not getting male lonelies are deteriorating society.
And if it makes you mad, then it's somewhat applicable to you, isn't it? That has zero effect on me. None. Huh? There's not one part of what she said. But when I watch... And again, I'm making comments about whoever, all these guys, you'll be able to street fight, who cares, right? The point is they recognize the dudes who are using the WNBA to kind of like weaponize dudes against Angel Reese and Brittany Griner got it. You know, oh, she's on the bench and she said, effing white girl. She didn't say that. She said, you know, effing whack call. But like people are going to gravitate to that. But these guys kind of know where their bread is buttered in May and June. So it's become this massive thing, which I still think is not a terrible thing for the WNBA because you're getting more and more viewers. I don't know how you control it. I don't know if you need to control it. But it is, today was one of those days where I was like, man, they are like really fired up for very anti-Reese. And they are actively going to root the next 5 or 6 games for the Fever to be a disaster without Caitlin Clark. And they're going to chronicle every bad moment and anything. If they don't win, you know, if they go 4-2 or – That's probably the bare minimum. They better freaking win, or these guys are will be fired up.
Well, they'll do it if they're not 6-0.
Yeah,
if they're 5-1 and have like one like miracle loss. Like they really should have been 6-0. Well, see, this is how bad they are losing games. Like that's just what they're looking for. Yeah. And that's what they want to
but
do.
But there's
like,
an audience.
Of course.
Now you be the judge of people who want to court that audience. You be the judge.
Let's be clear. Yeah. I don't think any of them really believe what they're saying. They're feeding an audience.
Yeah.
Like that's what they're doing. And so they'll play it up and like and then people there's this element because I don't think when Joy Taylor said what she said, I don't think they're talking about these guys. She's not talking about the guys that are on the air. She's talking about their audience. And the guys on the air are exploiting their audience. That's what they're doing. Yeah. So that's who she's talking about. Because I'm sure, like, Dakic, I have a family. I'm gonna love it. Like, yeah, she's not talking about you. She's talking about the morons that listen to you. That's who she's talking about. So, that's where that's coming from. So I'm sure that they're going to fight back against this. But that's not who she's going after.
It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battleborn Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
As always with Justin, college football on the docket. That's coming up in less than 5 minutes. But, Justin, how are you, buddy?
Doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're good. I wanted to, right out of the gates, get your take on what could be a developing legal sitch. We'll see here. Over the weekend, Jordan Hudson, Belichick's lady, posted, then deleted an attack on Pablo Torre's reporting. Torre, of course, is the guy who said, hey, Belichick might be out of a job by June 1st. It's pretty dramatic there. She said that Pablo Torre's findings have been nothing short of factually incorrect, slanderous, defamatory, and targeted. Can y'all please stop giving credibility to this reporter? When we on this show with you hear slanderous and defamatory, we kind of perk up. So what'd you make of what she said then pulled?
Yeah, I mean, I think, kind of what she's been striving for all along puts her actually in a tough position to make these assertions. She has made herself a public figure. And as we know from years of talking about this, when you're a public figure and something newsworthy is happening around you and somebody reports on it, even if it's false, that does not rise to the level of defamation. You have to prove that the reporter acted with actual malice. That means the reason they reported the falsehood is not only did they know it was false, but they did it intentionally to harm you. It's not even good enough to show that they did it for the purposes of promoting themselves. It has to be that they were doing it to harm you. And that's why you see these public figures that sue for defamation or threaten to sue for defamation almost never go through with it. And the only one I can even think about that had some response was, if you remember back, Jack Clark talking about potential steroid use. I believe it was of Albert Pujols. And he immediately got out ahead of it publicly, said, I didn't have any facts about that. I didn't know. I have no information. But when you're a public figure and something newsworthy is happening around you, the standard of proof for defamation is quite high.
And I'll first say, like, anybody that's watched these two specials that Pablo Torre did, fantastic. I mean, his podcast is incredible anyway, but he didn't just report things. He backed up almost everything on the air with how he got it, where the evidence is, all those other things. One detail, and I don't know how much you paid attention to everything that he put out, he got to the bottom of where that Ring doorbell camera came from. He went and talked to the people that actually owned the house that had the Ring camera. I would imagine there's an issue if you own an Airbnb putting out footage of somebody who rents from you. But what happened is they sent it in a group text to some of their friends, and some friends put it out. Like, does that become a legal issue?
So it could. It depends upon what state you're in and what notifications you give to the renters. Huh. So in you've heard of one party and two party states. In one party states, such as Nevada, You can record somebody if you are the only person who knows and the other person doesn't know. Most states are two-party states, which means you can't record somebody unless both of, or at least two people are a part of the conversation or the event are aware that it's being recorded. However, even one-party states do not allow one-party recordings of places in which somebody believes to have reasonable privacy. That is bedroom, bathroom, like kind of locker room sort of situation. And the question would become, if you're renting a house, do you have a reasonable expectation of privacy and not being recorded? Now, what gets really interesting is, well, that's outside, right? It's a doorbell camera. You certainly have a reasonable expectation of privacy inside, but outside, number one, it's open and obvious. You can see that there's a Ring doorbell camera. Two, I'm sure that it is on the disclosure for the renting. In fact, I'm in an Airbnb right now, and we had to check in, quote unquote, through the Ring doorbell cam when we got here. So obviously we're aware there's a Ring doorbell cam and they've used it. So we're aware that when we leave here, our actions outside of that door are going to show up on the Ring doorbell cam. So I think that they are probably okay. The disclosure to others in a group text is immaterial, assuming that the recording itself is okay.
Justin Watkins, nice enough to do a spot while he's at an Airbnb on the road. I know you're paying attention to everything that's going on, college football, mouth of the South, as I've been calling him, Greg Sankey, and his latest nudging, trying to drop some bombs out there about 16-team playoff, but we want some auto bids for the biggins.
Yeah, you know, this was interesting. This is the first time I saw Sankey kind of coming out and saying some things that his own membership didn't really back up. You know, you got him coming out there and saying, we want more autonomy, we want more auto bids. We floated the 4-4 model for the Big Ten and the SEC out of the 12 or 16 teams because that allows us to do some play-in games in conference at home sites. So we get to, you know, our 5-8 5-8 can also participate in a play-in game to be our top four for the auto bid. That gives us more money. And then you heard the likes of like Lane Kiffin come out and say, I don't like that model. I don't like auto bids. It should be the 16 best teams, seeded 1-16. Now, Lane Kiffin did say nobody should get automatic bids. And that would, of course, really affect the G6. I don't think that there is probably much momentum behind a free 16 at large. But I think we would be looking at right now a 5+11 model is what's being floated by ACC and Big 12. And Sankey didn't seem to be that didn't seem to be a non-starter for him. He seemed interested and would engage in dialogue there. So it's going to be very interesting over the course of, I would say, the next 6 months, but really I'm going to say the next 6 days.
Right.
We got Judge Wilkin that we're waiting to hear on the House settlement and whether or not she's going to approve it. I mean, again, all of these conferences are acting and planning as if that's going to be granted. And if it isn't, yeah, I don't know if they got all the backup plans in place for what this next football season looks like.
I just want to get your take real quick on this, and it's something I think I've mentioned on the show and kind of wrote about too, but what I was told is everybody's worried about this settlement announcement and everybody's focused on this date, but behind the scenes people are laughing because literally there's potentially hundreds of suits that'll be filed the second that settlement comes out, and there's going to be, you know, stays and, you know, hey, you can't really enforce this yet because this lawsuit just dropped. Like, is that a thing to you? Does that make sense that we would have to see that settlement date pushed back or not enacted in any way because we're waiting on all these other lawsuits?
Well, it's you would think there's a simple answer to that question, and there really isn't because there's a lot of options available to the judge. But I will say this, and I have been, like, consistent with this. This is not the answer. If this gets approved, if this settlement gets approved, the minute it gets implemented, whether it is stayed for a period of time during appeal or the judge implements part or all of the settlement immediately and does not grant a stay pending appeal, you will absolutely see dozens, if not hundreds, of lawsuits, because this settlement, in its terms, on its core level, violates antitrust for anybody who's not part of the member class right now. That's all high school players who can't opt in, can't opt out. So they're gonna, there's going to be some who opt out and object, and it does not comply with Title IX. There are firms who are currently advertising around their Title IX expertise, so that if this goes into effect, they will start filing lawsuits. I think this House settlement is very illusory, unless Congress uses it as a roadmap. If Congress is waiting on Judge Wilkin, who, you know, has been a part of these actions, was the judge underlying the O'Bannon case, has some familiarity with this subject matter. If she grants the settlement and then Congress uses that as cover to say, this is what the judge and the parties have all agreed is the best resolution, we are going to bless it with exemptions from antitrust and exemptions from Title IX. I am very skeptical that you might be able to get that through the Senate, but I am very skeptical that you get that through the House. There's too many members with too many universities who are opt out, or even if they've opted in, are going to be damaged well into the future for the implementation, because they can't keep up with the revenue for football and basketball, and because they'll have to cut Olympic sports.
Justin Watkins with us. On that front, on the player side, and the players are so seldom discussed in this whole thing, the fight continues for eligibility. Now we've got a kid who was at Nevada. I'm not even sure if he's still there, but Bram, the wide receiver, looking to play for a seventh season.
Yeah, so he is trying to rely on the Pavia decision. He played 3 years of junior college, and he played 2 years of D1 football, West Virginia and Nevada. But one of those years was a COVID year, so it was a freebie. And so he is challenging the rule of 5 years to play four. He's saying, hey, if you determine that 5 years is necessary or fair or reasonable to work towards a degree, then limiting eligibility to only four out of those 5 years is anti-competitive. I should be allowed to participate for all the 5 years of, you know, eligibility in the window. Again, you take out the COVID year, then I should be able to come back. I have not participated in sports in 5 years. And on top of it, again, the Pavia decision says JUCO doesn't count. So he's asking for not only 5 and 5, but give me the exemption that was granted to Pavia that you have not extended to everybody else. You have only extended 1 year of JUCO, not I played three. I want all 3 years of JUCO to not count.
A lot more to get into, but we are up against it. Enjoy your time away from Vegas, and we'll talk to you soon. All right, Justin?
All right. See you guys next week. Thanks.
There he is. Justin Watkins, Battleborne Injury Lawyers. Call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. 766-1400 is the number. And if you're in the north, dial 775. So not fun stuff to talk about, but it is going to affect the future of college sports. And while Mouth of the South Greg Sankey wants to plow through whatever is good for his SEC grift, it's going to be a lot of pushback.
I mean, I hope so.
I think that your claim a couple of years ago that there'll be a big 50, that is the grand game plan. It's not going to surprise any of us. That was the funny thing is I saw a battle between this newbie college football dude, Josh Pate, and an old guard guy, Stuart Mandel. And Mandel was getting trashed because, you know, the claim is, we told you this was coming. So what? We told you on this show it was coming. It doesn't mean it's inevitable. It doesn't mean you don't talk about it. It doesn't mean you can't get upset about it.
And I do feel like I was among the first people.
I think you were among the first.
About this.
Yes, you were among the first.
Yeah.
But this is not a shocker to lots of people out there, but you can still fight back and push against it. And how about the kids? I know it sounds crazy. I actually fight for the kids, the dream to win championships.